Welcome to Your Music Saved Us, where two friends blast ourselves into the past to relive and recontextualize the alternative Christian music we grew up listening to in the 1990s. My name is Jay.
I'm Clifton.
And we also have a special guest this week, Jason Fleetwood. Jason, tell us a little about yourself.
Well, I played in a couple bands, Rainy Days, Bloodshed. Yeah, I grew up in the scene, kind of. And yeah, I live in Huntington, California.
Well, we are happy to have you here, and we're happy to talk about this album this week. And guys, what are we listening to this week?
The best thing that we've listened to so far, and probably that we'll ever listen to on this podcast, in my opinion.
Ooh, strong opinion. All right. Jason, do you want to tell us what it is, actually?
Yeah, it's an album by Starflyer 59 called Fashion Focus. This was a really important album because this was the first album that I heard where I'm like, okay, Christian music doesn't suck, you know? So I just thought it was on another level, you know? Mm-hmm. Because before this, if you know anything about Starflyer, they had, you know, the Silver album, the Gold album, and Americana. They were all solid color albums, right? Mm-hmm. And this was the first one where they didn't do just one color. They had this cool, like, cover. And the songs were, like, not that shoegazy. I mean, I love the early stuff, but I'm just saying it went away from, like, the shoegazy million guitars, you know, tracked. And it was just, I thought it was awesome, man.
So, okay, that brings up a good point. And I was telling Clifton this before that, yeah, I remember before this album came out, just seeing the cover artwork in, like, an ad or something, I was like, oh, this is going to be different. It's not a solid color one anymore. Yeah. And it clearly was. But could, you know, either one of you kind of take us back and give us a little history on Starflyer 59? How'd we get to this point?
So Starflyer is Jason Martin's project. There's always been other people in the band, obviously, but it's Jason's kind of the only person who's been in it since the beginning. Jason's the brother of Ronnie Martin, who is Joy Electric. And the two of them formed a band called Dance House Children before splitting ways to form Starflyer 59 and Joy Electric. Jason started Starflyer 59 in 1993 with an interesting take on shoegaze, I think. He signed that same year by Tooth & Nail Records. In fact, the story has been told in some places that Brandon Ebel then brought Starflyer to Frontline and Alorma Records. And when they turned them down for signing, that was a key factor in Brandon Ebel leaving and starting Tooth & Nail.
Oh.
So also in those same tellings of the story, a lot of the hardcore bands that were signed to Tooth & Nail early on were severely neglected because Brandon was focused on bands like Starflyer.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But within a year of starting, Martin had signed to Tooth & Nail and had the first Starflyer album, Silver, recorded. At some point, we're going to talk about Americana and maybe some other early Starflyer stuff, so I just want to skip all that. So we'll skip forward 4 years past the release of Silver and Gold and Americana, which brings us to 1998, when Jason, at the age of 26 years old, went into the studio again. And the story is that Jason had been really burned out by recording Gold and Americana. And when he went to the studio to record, maybe even before he went to the studio to record, he was talking to Gene Eugene, talking about how burned out he was from those recordings, and he didn't want to do the same thing again. And Gene convinced him to go in a different direction. And so all the songs he had prepared for that were thrown out. And Jason emerged from the green room with a change in sound for Starflyer 59 that would pretty much never get looked back from, and we got the Fashion Focus.
So rad. Yeah, and I remember, I'm pretty sure that Gene played, so the keys, we'll talk about it later, but the keys on Fell in Love at 22, I'm pretty sure Gene played on that.
I did a little look into this album, just a quote that I found from Jeff Cloud. You know, he plays bass in the band. He said, we were on tour and we were trying to figure out what kind of record fans would most want to hear. And he said, finally, we just said, this is stupid. Let's just make a record that we would like to buy ourselves. And if it has no rock and roll, so be it.
Wow.
And I think that's kind of
that's really
what
cool.
They did.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah, like I said, it was an album that they started doing like piano and like they have all these like cool textures too, like 60s sounds and like. Yeah. It was totally different, you know?
Yeah. Yes. Well, What memories do you both have of this? Like, when did this come into your life? What's kind of the first memory of this?
This came out when I was on tour with Fan Mail, with Scott Zaletta's band, Fan Mail. Do you know that band?
Yeah, oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah. So I played bass with them. We were on tour, and it came out when we were on tour. And I had the night shift, like driving all night. Everyone was sleeping. I remember I put this CD in. I used to love driving it. Well, like one of his songs. I used to love driving at night because it was so peaceful. Everyone's sleeping. And I put this thing on and I listened to it over and over and over. It was such a vivid memory, you know. It's such a vivid memory for me. But the first memory I have of Starflyer was, you know, they were always around. Like, they were always playing with, you remember Javelina, the band Javelina?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
They were all playing together, and you know, like the first time I was like a huge fan, and I remember like being super nervous to like go up to Jason Martin, and he was really cool. I think I sent you an email, Clifton, but like that bad experience you had with one of our asshole members.
I don't think of as a bad experience, but okay.
Well, someone was not cool, but yeah, he was the total opposite of that. He was like, he was like so nice, and like he's just like a really nice guy. But yeah, going back to your question, yeah, the first time is probably when I was on tour. You know, that's when it came out.
So I have to admit that I found this and Starflyer later.
Oh.
Yeah, so, and it, not like a lot later, but a few years later. So, of course, I'd heard some Starflyer in high school just because, you know, them being around and them on Tooth and Nail comps, and especially the Housewife Love song
being on
the Tooth and Nail VHS sets.
Yeah.
You know? But I just never, I always liked it, but I just never taken the time to get into it, you know? And then my next memory of Starflyer is Jay, you and I, going to Adrian's music shop across the street from our dorms in college, and the two of you would talk about Starflyer and how much they rocked, and I don't know why, but the image that I got in my head was more like Low Tom, like Jason and David Bazan's Project Today, where it's more like dad rock for some reason, and I just got this dad rock image in my head, and I don't know why, but that just stuck, and it took me a little while, another year or two, to really listen to Starflyer. And then I know that I had the Fell in Love at 22 EP at some point, or single, whatever it was. And then it was the next year that I finally got this album. So that would have been 2001. I specifically remember getting this album from the store, going to my apartment, going into my bedroom, you know, because it was like a college living situation where everyone has their own bedrooms, you know, and sitting, laying on my bed with the liner notes and just listening to this album over and over again the day I bought it.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, it was just because there's just, I don't know. It's something we, you know, it's like a strange and familiar and kind of like also delightful and uncomfortable thing, like all at the same time. There's just, it's just a really impactful album.
Yeah. 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 The vibe that's going on with this album is just unique, you know? And I was the same. I listened to it over and over and over. It was one of the first albums I did that, like in the Christian scene, I did that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I listened to it straight for like weeks. I don't, like, you know,
that's
all I listened to. Yeah.
So you guys both didn't just listen to it; you were listening to it over and over and over again. I'm gonna jump forward in just a second and talk about like listening to it now. But any other memories associated with this album or with Starflyer at the time before we kind of jump into the present?
The next time I met Jason Martin, do you remember that EP that came out? I think it was, Live. It was like a French name. Live.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes. I loved that one.
I loved it.
I have it right here.
And there was like, I think there was a really long song on that. And I went up to Jason Martin. I'm like, dude, I love this, EP. He's like, all he said to me is like, what do you think about that 10-minute long song? I'm like, it's cool. He was just stoked on that, you know, that he recorded a 10-minute long song. I think it's on that EP. I could be wrong.
I think you're right, maybe, because it's only like 3 or 4 songs.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. So that's probably one. Right.
Clifton, any other old memories before we jump into the present?
I mean, this is really tied to the song "I Drive a Lot," but after this album came out, I would listen to it a lot while driving. Mm-hmm. And I drove a lot from my, I'm an architect, and back then I wasn't an architect, but I worked in architecture, and I've always done like jobs in small rural places outside of the big city. So I've always driven to them a lot. And so this, I've always listened to this album a lot, and it's kind of just always had that, kind of, you know, it starts off with that song, but the whole album kind of just has that kind of that, like that mood, that kind of like loneliness, yeah, of the feeling of driving.
Right. You know? Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely tied to driving, right? There's something about driving, mm-hmm, in, yes, this record.
Yes. I think there's a point to that we'll talk about here as we get into the song.
Okay. So when you guys put it on now, and we kind of jump back into it, you know, prior to this episode, like, mm-hmm, what memories came to mind? What did it live up to your memories of it before? Was it everything you were expecting? Like, in first impressions, just
for me, yeah, it did hold up, and you know that doesn't always happen, but yeah, the songs are just as good as they were when I first heard them. You know, I haven't listened to it in probably, I don't know, 10, 15 years. Wait, how old am I? Oh. Yeah, 15 years. yeah, they all held up. What do you think, Clifton?
I never stopped listening to this album, so it didn't have anything to hold up for. It's always been a part of my life. Mm. Yeah.
I thought they really did. I also felt like they're pretty timeless. Like, this, yes, album, yeah, to me does not sound dated, just because, you know, at the time it had a bunch of, like you said, the 60s sound, just, yeah, all kinds of,
yeah,
stuff. The other thing that did stand out to me that I didn't notice before is this is really almost, to me, almost like a collection of singles or something. Like, a lot of the songs sound pretty different. I think, mm-hmm, at the time I didn't notice because it was not that traditional Starflyer sound. Mm-hmm. So I thought, oh, okay, this is a new sound. But now when I listen to it, I'm like, actually, a lot of these songs are pretty different sounding from each other. Mm-hmm. Somehow they, right, work together as a whole album, but
it's the mood, though. The mood, yeah, ties them, yeah, together.
The mood works. No, you're completely right. But when you put them back to back, sometimes you're like, wait a minute, that's really a different sounding song. And I wonder if it was kind of, we're trying something new with this album, you know, mm-hmm, we're kind of throwing the rule book out. We're just going to play what we like. And so, you know, if the song sounds one way and this other song sounds another way, whatever.
For me, I've always kind of found myself falling in love with transitional albums, knowingly or not. But I think there's just some sort of like raw energy and in the experimentation that comes with a transitional album like this. Mm-hmm. And kind of what you said, where there's thrown a lot of things against the wall, but it also has there's a lot of heart in it, you know? And so I've always found myself falling in love with these kind of transitional albums. And I think that may be part of what's going on here. It just has that freshness of doing something new and finding a true love of writing songs again.
Yeah. Yeah. And to what you were saying, like, the every song is different. Like, when you go into like card games with old friends, it's like, oh, mm-hmm, here's this happy, like, go lucky song in this dark album. You know, it's like, mm-hmm, the songs are really different, you know?
Well, let's jump in to the songs. And, you know, the first one is I Drive a Lot, which we've kind of already referenced multiple times. But mm-hmm, I don't know, both of you kind of give me your thoughts on this song.
I just love this one. I love the sound. I love the way it makes you feel. And it's got this like kind of droning thing going on, you know, mm-hmm, and it puts you in kind of a trance. And I just love the way it makes you feel, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of drone on this album too, which yeah, I really love, and I think I mentioned it in the next song, in "We're the Ordinary," on my notes. But yeah, there's so the song starts off with this kind of great Tom's roll, which is just totally not Starflyer, and then it comes in with a wall of sound, synthesized strings. So anyone who's, you know, expecting to hear a follow-up to Americana here has got to just be like,
right?
That's not the experience I had with the album, because I had not been a fan of Starflyer 59 before this, and so I don't know what someone who was a fan of Starflyer 59 when hearing that would have been, you know?
Yeah, I wonder if they were pissed, like, when Dylan went electric or something. Or, like, you know, like, you know, the first time someone heard Van Halen 1984 and he's using keyboards on Jump, you know? Who knows? But I'm sure it was a shock, you know?
Yeah. From what I've read, the community around Starflyer was pretty supportive of the change and kind of just rolled with it, you know, because it, even though it doesn't have that shoegazy sound, it does keep the mood a lot of Starflyer. So I always misheard the first lyric, and so it's "well if you need it a lot," but I always heard it as "well if you need it a ride."
Yeah, that's actually how I heard it too.
Oh, really? I thought it was "well if you need it or not." So, okay.
Yeah.
Three different
I like
ways.
"Well, if you needed a ride," because it actually makes sense in the song where I don't know what "if you needed or a lot" means.
Yeah, I don't know. His lyrics are very, they're somewhat obscure, you know, like,
Oh, yes.
And, which I like. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, they're, and I think something that's true on this album, probably true of a lot of the early Starflyer stuff, especially, is that the lyrics are sparse, but well used. You know, they don't make a lot of sense, but they hit the mood correctly, and they kind of create these little moments of you know, your brain falling in line with what's going on with the music, I think.
Totally. Yeah.
I also during this song I subtitled my notes I play major sevenths a lot.
Ah. Uh-huh.
Cuz there are a lot of major sevenths on this album.
Uh-huh.
I felt like lyrically this might be the song I relate to most on this album. Now more as an adult. This came out when I was 17 or 18, whenever, and so, like, I don't know that I got, I mean, I was still in high school, you know, I don't know that I got it then, but now it's like, oh yeah, okay, drive a lot, thinking of money and things you didn't think as so much about as a, you know, high school kid and stuff. So going back, that this has been one of the songs I've enjoyed the most on the album. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, so, you know, I grew up Jay, you grew up in a similar town to me, you know, which is a small Texas town, you know, not tiny, but a small town. And literally my friends and I in high school, there was so little to do in our town that we would just get in the car and turn on music and drive around.
Uh-huh. You know? Uh-huh.
Yeah. And that wasn't a new thing either. Like, my parents told me stories from the mid-70s of... Yep. Turning on music and driving around, which is must have been a more of a social thing back then, because there were actually laws against it.
Really?
On certain streets that if cops saw you drive by more than one or two times on a certain street, they would pull you over and give you a ticket.
That's crazy.
So you had to be a lot. Yeah. But there's just nothing to do, you know, so you would just get in cars with your friends and turn the music on and go.
Well, yeah, that's still today one of my favorite things. There's something about listening to music and driving around, right? Like, I will drive down, I live on there's a famous street here called PCH, and I just drive down PCH just looking at the ocean and just listening to music. Like, I'm not even going anywhere, you know? I just like driving and listening to music. And that's also why, like, this song is so cool, because I could just picture Jason Martin, because, you know, he has a trucking business, right?
Right.
Yeah. So I just picture him driving in like a 18 wheeler and thinking about song ideas, you know, like, I don't
exactly.
know.
So I think that's where this comes from, and probably where a lot of this album comes from, honestly, is that, yeah. So he owns the trucking company now. He took it over when his dad passed away back in like 2013 or so. But at that time, in 1998, he just worked for his dad at the trucking company, and he drove a semi for his dad. Yeah,
yeah, and
he drove a lot.
And then he took it over. That's where "I am the CEO" comes in.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. The line, for example, you know, "think of things I'd be with time to kill and just a lot of money." That made more sense to me as I've grown older.
Yep, you know? That's what I mean.
Yeah, that's what
yeah.
you were saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I will say on my side, I like what I do, but if I just had a lot of money, I could just do it the way I want to do it instead of having to
uh-huh. yeah.
listen to how other people want me to do it, you know?
Right.
One thing that hit me on this album, when I really started listening to it for this, one thing that hit me is just how sad this album is, and I never think about that when I put on this album. I don't think about how sad it is. I just relate to it.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, but you're right. It is the tone and maybe lyrically, it is overall mm-hmm. a really sad album, you know?
Yeah.
But I've always been drawn to, like, that kind of stuff. So that's probably why I love it so much, you know?
Yeah.
Speaking of sad, can I go to the next song?
No, wait, we still have lots of great stuff. Like,
oh, sorry.
When I'm all, like the line, when I'm all worked up, I think of friends of mine now 35. Do you remember that when that was old?
Yeah, that's yes. true. You know, you're like, oh, 35.
Yeah, it's like, you're almost dead. Yeah. Yeah. When you're a kid, it's like 30s? What? I can't even have
yeah.
people live that long.
And for me, I always thought of it that way, but I've always struggled a lot with like anxieties and depression. So for me, it was like, well, if other people can make it to 35, I guess I can make it past 19. You know? I found this song live on YouTube 3 times, which is the most of any song on this album that I could find. And I love, if you've ever seen Starfly 59, you're going to appreciate this, because one of them starts off with Jason saying, "You can keep my vocals just a little bit lower, please." And then the song starts, and then you can't hear his vocals.
That sounds about right.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm surprised you found clips. Well, you sent me some clips, but there's not that much out there. Because, like I was telling you, they don't play a lot live a lot.
Yeah. Now.
And the few times that I saw them, it was just like super low key. And like you said, the vocals were always really low. You couldn't hear them. But that's how he liked it. And the other thing too I wanted to say about this is the first time vocally, this album, he goes up from that whispery, like low singing thing, you know? Like he's kinda branching out that way.
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah, the vocals are so important on this album.
Yes.
In fact, I always take out the vocals so I can listen to the song just instrumental. So I can listen to albums instrumentally. And this is a really interesting album to listen to instrumentally. It's gorgeous. Except for I Fell in Love at 22, which is really boring.
Oh, really?
But
interesting.
Because the vocals are just so important on that.
Yeah, true. It's such a it's a beautiful melody.
Yeah, Jay and I have seen Starflyer live once, I believe.
Where was that?
Yeah, that I'd forgotten about till you reminded me, in Dallas, Texas in 2006.
Yeah, I found the video of it just right before.
Oh, you found the video?
Yeah, well, not mine, but I just found a video of someone else had put the exact show that we saw up on YouTube.
Which, by the way, Clifton, I think you can, I'm pretty sure they play iDrive a lot in that set list.
Do they?
Uh-huh, okay, cool. Because I didn't make it all the way through it quickly, and I was like, oh.
What year and where was this?
2006. Okay. Dallas, Texas, what was it, Wall of Sound?
Wall of Sound Festival, some tiny little festival we went to there.
Yeah.
So
people don't come through Texas a lot, so our live music experience is fairly limited.
Well, I remember MXPX used to always go to Houston.
Yeah.
But they went everywhere, I guess.
All right, guys, I'm going to jump to the next
song. Yes, let's do it.
I got to keep us moving through this. We're the Ordinary, and I will just say one thing. I love the kind of first melody that starts the song off, and it that's what I remember the most from the song. Yeah, it's just such a nice little melody throughout.
Let me play it real fast.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Yeah, that.
Yeah. This song is so haunting, you know? It's so haunting, and that drone thing is going on, and I love those keys, man.
Mm-hmm. My first notes are haunting opening of guitars, keys, and strings in the background. It's just, it's ephemeral melody that slowly walks down the scale, you know? It's just, yeah.
Yeah.
And then after that, that harmonica or whatever it is joins in.
I know. It's like, so random, but it works, you know?
Yeah. And it's slightly off the beat, too, and it's always in the same general area, but it's off by, like, you know, a quarter of a note, half a note, you know, half a beat sometimes. Yeah. It's just, yeah, it just adds to the kind of the otherworldliness and hauntingness. And then this one really so many layers. So we, you know, even though we lost the layers and layers of guitars on this song, we kept layers and layers of something and different things. And it's just as gorgeous.
Yeah. It's beautiful. And this is like, especially this song, this is one of the, there's like four songs in particular I would listen to over and over. This is one of them.
I think we've talked about this before, Jay, but I kind of always love vocals that are not singing, but they're just more involved in the emotion that's going on. And even his vocals on this are kind of just kind of a monotone kind of drone, you know, we're the ordinary people, close, but not the first, but I think, you know. Ordinary people, close, but not the worst, but I think you
know. Yeah. So do you like these lyrics? What do you think about them?
I think at some point I say, hey, stop accusing me of things in this song. they're impactful, you know? I don't know what they mean exactly, but just state for that first verse there, you know, we're ordinary people, close, but not the worst. But I think, you know, I don't know what that means, but it's kind of just your heart kind of breaks with that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, yeah. They're very cryptic, you know, but it's all about, again, going back to tone, you know, it's like, it's the style. I like it.
And then the next set of lyrics are, we're all the lonely people, alone, but not at first. But I think, you know. Yeah, and then that harmonica comes back. It's,
yeah.
But yeah, I like that line is especially impactful. How do I say this? I'll just say it. My grandfather is one of those all the lonely people alone, but not at first, you know, I think, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of has a way of pushing people away from himself, maybe to avoid pain or hurt or the complications that come with being close to other people. And yeah,
I can definitely relate.
Yeah, me too. I got a little bit of that myself, too.
Yeah, but, you know, like, going back, this is a sad album, and lyrically it's sad, but it's awesome, too. Yeah.
He takes that very complicated thing and says it so simply in such a way that if you just read it, it almost seems trite, but in the song, it's just, it hits you hard. It's almost, I mean, that line especially is like kind of almost a gut punch to me.
Yeah.
Then there's sometimes we don't have a life. That's where I wrote, stop accusing me of things. So this is where Gene's organs really shine on this song. This is one where that was really fascinating to listen to the instrumental version of it when I took the lyrics out, when I took the vocals out.
Mm-hmm.
Gene's organ is just crazy. It sounds pretty simple when you just listen to the song and don't pay a lot of attention to it, but he is all over the place and he's random and he kind of just, there's a lot of dissonance in it first off. But he also just kind of has these like weird stops and starts where he's like, I don't know. It's just,
yeah,
it's pretty fascinating.
Really almost seems like a member of the band on this album.
Totally. Yeah,
he's got stuff in almost every song, and also especially this song, but others on here too. Makes me wonder how much studio time they had for this, or maybe since Gene owned the studio it just didn't matter, because it seems like they took their sweet time on this album, just kind of doing whatever they wanted to on a lot of these songs. This was not something they had like 3 days to record, you know, the whole thing. They definitely had quite a bit of time for this.
Yeah, I remember, and the green room was such a cool place because you could take your time there. So I'm not sure how many days this took, but
I can't find anything. Yeah, I wish I knew. Looked. Jason, you have any specific memories of the green room just while we're
talking about it? Yeah. So I don't know if you guys knew this, but it was a house. It was the most run-down house you ever saw. Like, there was a street, right? It was in Huntington, and it was a nice neighborhood. And the worst house, it looked like a haunted house, kind of. I mean, just how run-down it was. I mean, it wasn't. But it was. And then you go inside, and it's this beautiful gorgeous, like, you got your drum room there, you know, with the glass, and then they had the huge tape, like, that was what was cool, too, is, like, back when you used tape, like, you had to cut it, you know? And they had this huge tape machine, and I remember being dark and stuff. Like Macaulay was saying, like, yeah, there was all this, like, it looked like, from the White Stripes, it looked like something, it looked like his house. There's, like, all this, like, you know, vinyl stuff, and, like, I don't know. It's really cool. It was a really special place. You guys heard a lot about that, huh? Like, I didn't know until I was listening to you guys that it had, like, a reputation. Like, how did you guys hear about it? Just by reading liner notes?
Yeah. Liner notes. So yes, being exactly. Dorks to read liner notes, and we're like, oh, the green room, the green room, the green room.
Yeah, you know. That was, like, where everyone recorded back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I ever heard anything specifically about it back in the day, but it just, when you see it on so many albums, it kind of just starts to build up a reputation in your mind, you know?
Yeah. It was definitely a cool place, man. It had it was small too, so it had that warm sound. I think that helped it, but.
All right. Jumping back to the album, you know, we talked about We're the Ordinary, which I feel like I would say part of the melody in this song is kind of the music, right? It's not the vocals so much. Mm-hmm. In this one, I mean, they do carry the melody a little bit, but that first kind of sound that you hear in that little melody just keeps going through the whole thing
until the end when Jason comes in with his welling, reverb drenched guitar and just rocks it out for 15 seconds.
Uh-huh. You know? Yeah,
and they're a gorgeous 15 seconds that are just like an iconic part of the album.
Yeah, that's where Jason's like, hey, I can still rock this guitar. I'm still a badass.
Yes.
Well, where I was going to segue to, though, is the next song that we're going to talk about. We're skipping one, but the next one is Fell in Love at 22. And that's one where I feel like the melody is the vocals in that song more. So let's talk Fell in Love at 22. That also, I guess, was a single later.
Mm-hmm. But later.
Right.
Like a year later.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, this is my all-time favorite song on this record. And
oh, nice.
I can't say enough about this. Lyrically, musically, I just love it. That's interesting, Clifton, you said without the vocals, it's not very exciting. I could see that, I guess, because the vocal melody is, it's so beautiful, you know? And when he's like talking about like, fell in love at 22 with a girl that was close to you, you know? I'm assuming, I don't know, I'm assuming he's kind of maybe praying, or like it's kind of a prayer. I don't know.
That's interesting. And that never occurred to me.
Yeah, I don't know. But I just think it's gorgeous. The piano is so beautiful, you know? And you know what's funny about this song too is it doesn't really have a chorus. I'm always fascinated by songs that are really popular that don't have choruses. It just it's very interesting to me. But it's just basically verses, you know.
Yeah. Musically, when you listen to this without the lyrics, I mean the music is almost saccharine sweet. And it's beautiful, but it's only like 45 seconds in, you're like, okay, they're just doing the same thing over and over again, you know?
Right, yeah.
And it's the vocals that and the lyrics that keep it moving.
Yes.
You know, it is a sweet love song, but something about this, I don't know, I mean, something about this kind of, and it travels through life, you know? Fell in love at 22 with a girl that's close to you, found a job, found a life, no more long days, and the lyrics say longer nights, but I always heard it as found a job and found a life, no more long days, or running wild. That's what I always heard, but that's not what the lyrics say. There's another reference here to playing card games, with your girl and a family too, playing card games in the room. And then the closest thing to a course on here is him when he just kind of stays for a moment on "This is our life, our old times."
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And then it comes back with another reference. Now that John is 22 with a family like you, 42. So we're 20 years later now.
Yeah.
I want to know who John is.
I don't know.
Who's John?
Also, like, how old was Jason when they recorded this? Like
26.
20. Okay. At 26, I was not thinking about all these things yet. You know, like,
right.
Settling down, kids, card games, and the thing. So he seems to have a very kind of mature mentality.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, that's a great point. I wasn't thinking about that either.
Here's a question I have for you guys. Is there a sadness in this song?
I mean, I feel like there is, but...
Me too, because I always got a huge loneliness out of this song.
Yes. Yeah.
And I wasn't sure if that was just me thinking domesticity is lonely, or or if it was actually there in the song. But yeah, there's this weird sadness, and it's not in the lyrics either. It's just, I don't know.
It's the music. It's definitely in the music, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's just that vibe, going back to that vibe, you know?
Yeah. It's a very sad and kind of lonely, isolated album.
Well,
yeah.
And his vocal delivery pretty much in every album is never like just super positive and just happy. It's just the way he kind of sings is just always, to me, it always feels a little sad, you know?
But this is one of the more upbeat ones on the album as far as his vocal delivery goes.
True.
Yeah. He actually, it's not just monotone. He actually sings on this song.
Oh, I know. Yeah. That was the first thing I was thinking. Like, he's like singing. And I looked up, I did some research, and did you know there's like a ton of covers of this?
Yeah.
It was really fun to like look up the different covers.
I found one kind of like bluegrassy cover that was Yeah. Yeah, a lot of covers of this song.
Yeah.
This is the single, right? But this album doesn't have a video or anything. I mean, really, I guess the only video that we ever got out of Starflyer was Housewife Love Song.
Hmm.
But I don't know. Something about this, I think it's kind of a little bit of a crime that Tooth & Nail didn't do something with this album or in this song, really, especially giving it a video.
Yeah, I'm surprised by that. I always felt like Starflyer, if they were on... maybe on a bigger platform, they would have been a lot bigger, I think, you know.
I did read that, was it before this album or right after this album, that they were looking at talking with a bigger record label?
Yeah, I think he was always him and Brandon were really good friends, and I think he just always felt a loyalty to Brandon Ebel, you know.
One of the essays I read about this album, they were saying they think this would have been the moment to make the jump, like do those first three albums on Tooth & Nail, and then when this came out, jump to another label. Because you do, this is one of those I think they could have gotten bigger and had more recognition on something else, because this is a really different sound and it's just a really nice album. But I think some people probably didn't give it a chance because it was on Tooth & Nail.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I also think, you know, just some videos, and if, because Tooth & Nail made videos all the time.
Yeah. So
if this had had a video, if some of the songs on Gold and Americana had videos, they probably gotten played on MTV, you know? I don't know what the thinking was there.
That's weird. I mean, even Fan Mail made a video.
Right.
why didn't they? I wonder why they didn't make a video for this song if this was the single.
Not a clue. It's a little bit of a crime, though. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to jump back in, but you want to say any more about the song?
No, I want to say something about Holiday Song.
Oh, good. I knew it wasn't. We might skip that one, but I wanted to mention it too. Listen, I like Holiday Song. I like that it's a short song. I like the organ on it. I like the way it kind of kicks in, upbeat. I think it's nice. I know Clifton doesn't think it fits, but...
No, it's a great song, but why is it on this album?
I gotta hear this again. It's
so out of place, isn't it? All
right. Play it for us, Clifton.
Right. right. It is kind of weird, right? Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That might be the strangest song on the album.
Yeah. It's definitely the most upbeat song on the album. And maybe that's why I think it doesn't fit.
It is like a Christmas song too, right?
Yeah. And I think they even put it, didn't Tooth & Nail put it on like Happy Christmas, one of those Christmas ones? I'm pretty sure they did.
Okay.
Oh.
I've never been a Christmas music person, so I never bought those albums, but
I think it's on that first one.
You don't like Christmas, you don't like Holly Jolly Christmas, Clifton.
I don't know.
What,
like,
about Mariah Carey?
It's just well, there are exceptions, obviously. But you know how, like, it gets a little old when it starts in October here. And
I know, right?
Every store that you walk into has yeah. Like, you can't fill up on gas without getting Christmas music stuck in your head.
Okay, I'm going to skip us forward. Next one we were talking about All the Time, mm-hmm. And I see Clifton's notes on this. So this, your first line makes me laugh.
Really?
Yeah.
No, so this song kind of lays bare one of the major influences on this album, and it feels like old white people island music. You know, kind of that like 50s, you know how some of the crooners back then did some like island type stuff, you know, where they ripped off indigenous music and
white guys doing calypso. Wait, are there still drums on this?
It's just it's that steel guitar or something that sounds like a steel guitar.
Yeah.
That's what really gives it away, I think. But yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's it's a good song. But and it's one of those influences that we see throughout the entire album. I think there's this real kind of faux exotic 60s, like the 60s idea of exotic kind of thing in this album.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That 60s vibe. And then kind of like almost too, like it's kind of mixed with like a doo-wop thing too, almost, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is weirdly, this is, I think, probably the most Christian song on this album as far as lyrics go.
Ooh, let me look.
He's got this. So this is the second half of the lyrics for the song. Love a world that's not our own. Pretty soon we'll go home and find some real love that will make us happy all the time.
Hmm.
I assume that means heaven.
Which, it's funny, when you say those out loud, it seems super cheesy. But in the song, it comes across so much better, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, it's totally different when you read lyrics out loud, you know, it changes everything. Like this guy, that I listened to, he's like, hey, if you did a spoken word of nu metal, it's a whole different thing.
I cannot imagine that.
Sorry.
I'm going to go try it now, though. But yeah, so the entire second half of this album is just Jason repeating the lines all the time, all the time, all the time. We get this kind of like twinkly guitar after the all the time. Let me.
I love that. I love that guitar.
Yes. I mean, it is just an iconic moment on this album. That so gorgeous.
Yeah, that guitar, man, and the reverb. I mean, it does remind you like just sitting on a beach, you know?
Yes. Yeah, he perfectly captured that island thing.
Also, does anyone know like what they were listening to before they recorded this? Because I'm just curious the influences, because it clearly was not anything from 1998,
right?
You know, maybe from 20 or 30 years before that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I do know his influence, like just general influences, were of course the Pixies and and the Smiths. I've heard him talk about that in interviews. But
that makes sense.
This album, yeah, it sounds like he was listening to like other stuff, you know.
A lot of people mention a lot of new wave being part of this, the influence on this album. which I don't, and maybe my experience with New Wave is more surface level. I don't know, but I just don't hear it as much.
Yeah. New Wave. Yeah. No, I don't hear that.
Me either. But if you go look at like people who review this album, that's all they talk about.
Maybe they're I could see it on other albums, later ones, like,
right.
The Stranger one maybe. And,
Leave Here a Stranger.
But yeah, I don't hear that on this.
Me either. So I found this one live twice, both from 1998, and they somewhat resemble the album version of this song.
Wow, really?
They somewhat, yes. The whole last part of the song where he does the all the time thing over and over again, that's not a part of it. So the song's like half as long. and it's very hard, which is kind of a fun thing about Starfly 59 is even after he went into this phase of writing these softer songs live, they're still playing not as hard as they were, you know, during the Golden Americana phase, obviously, but there's still reverb drench guitars when it's live.
Oh, yeah. Did he have all the pedals when you saw him live? He had like a million pedals when I saw him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because I'm a big nerd, and I actually did some research on the pedals that he uses.
Oh, really?
I can only find that he uses six pedals. He uses a Boss reverb pedal. And he always plays into a clean amp. For a matter of fact, if you watch him on the tour for this album, he's most of the time playing into a Line 6 tube amp with nothing going on with it.
Oh.
But he has this Vox. In the early 90s, Vox, or maybe late, yeah, early 90s, Vox did a series of tube of distortion and overdrive pedals that had tubes in them, which I don't know how much that works because they're pretty low voltage, but that's what he uses. That's one of the places that really gnarly sound comes from.
Interesting.
And as someone who doesn't play guitar, I have no idea what you're talking about. But anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like if somebody started talking math right now.
I'm gonna move us ahead to the next song on our list, Card Games and Old Friends, which is another kind of upbeat sounding song. So tell us about that one.
I love this. Again, like, it's very upbeat. It's one of the more happier songs, you know? Mm-hmm. And I love the drums, how it's just doing the constant, like, toot, toot, toot.
Say goodbye, it's no lie.
Yeah, I love the feel. I love the lyrics. Like, just I just picture, you know. I mean, when you get a card game going with people, it's like a nice. It conjures up like a good memory, you know.
Yeah, my friends and I would always play card games, play cards quite a bit because we lived in a boring town, you know. And that was a big thing that we did. And I always found this is always a special song for me too. Yeah.
Yeah. I like the drums a lot.
And that's something kind of on this entire album is it's a really beat-driven album. There's a couple songs that aren't, but that's actually another, I think just if you want me to like an album, just have a strong beat on the songs, because that's a good way to get to me.
Yeah.
It's a very beat-driven album, and it's just, and because just the way Jason's always played, you know, is kind of just a lot of downbeats, you know, anyways, with his guitar. And so between the drums and his guitar doing that, there's just a lot of, it's very beat heavy.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, on my version of this album, which doesn't include a holiday song, this is the most upbeat song on the album.
Yeah, and it's probably it's one of my favorite songs on this album.
Mm-hmm, mine too. I did find when I was looking for live videos of Starflower, I found that I couldn't find this song, but someone made a video, like a fan made video for this song. That's it's footage from the Wonder Years.
Really?
Yes, of them playing a card game.
Oh, so they showed clips of that and then played this, huh?
Yeah,
that's funny.
But yeah, it was a pretty amusing video. I Fell in Love at 22. I found a fan made video that was just like someone's dog. Just video of their dog with such, I Fell in Love at 22 playing over it.
I love YouTube. You can do anything.
Yeah.
When I was I found an essay about Starflyer that I think was in that box set that came out in like 2000.
But oh, yeah.
Put it online. And it's by this guy, J. Edward Keyes, who does he's a good writer, and I think he works for Bandcamp now. But in it, he pointed out he'd been interviewing the band, and the line in this song towards the end where he says, "No surprise, different lives, express the world on time." That was actually just written on a FedEx box that was sitting in the studio. And so they included that in the lyrics, which made me think, how many other times has Jason done that? Because there are lines where you're like, what? You know, and yeah. I wonder how many other little things he's just kind of sticking in places because it sounds good and why not?
Yeah. He seems like that kind of guy, you know?
That would make a lot more sense out of his lyrics.
Yep. Okay, this wasn't on our list, but can we just briefly talk about Shut Your Mouth? Because I didn't realize it was Mike Knott doing the background vocals until I, you know, was going back, listened to it. And I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, totally.
It's one of the first things I found when I researched this album. The Knott heads out there are really thorough about claiming credit for anything Mike Knott has done.
Yeah, the guys who run that Knott heads website, my gosh, like anything Mike Knott is on there. Yeah.
Oh, they're hard. They're hardcore. Yeah,
they are.
And he was always around the green room too. You know.
Yeah.
Like he was always around.
When we did one of his albums, and I've read lots of stories about he always owed Gene Eugene money because he couldn't pay off his studio fees.
he has a really interesting story, but yeah, sorry, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
No, one other thing I wanted to mention in this, and this is where I was a little confused, like towards the end of this song, what does it say? After all, really like just to never tell, we really think that you'd burn in hell. I really think that you know, and I'm like, I was not expecting to hear Burn in Hell on a Starflyer album ever. And I don't know, either of you guys have any thoughts as to what this song is actually about?
He's obviously pissed off at somebody.
Right.
Yeah, that's really surprising for his lyrics.
Don't know.
I'm not sure.
He's talking about lying, left your girl, left your family too, for things that you're never sure about. Like, is he wanting them to burn in hell, or is he just saying that's what's going to happen to you? I
think he expects them to burn in hell.
Okay. He's not wishing it on them.
No.
He seems like a nice guy. He doesn't seem like somebody would like to
wish yeah, on yeah. No, he doesn't seem like that kind of guy at all.
Okay. Let's go to the album title, the song, The Fashion Focus. Tell us about that one.
I want to throw this one in here really quick because it's another one that feels like one of those old crooner 60s songs, 60s lounge songs this time, I think. And it's kind of like a 60s crooner calling back to the 40s crooners, I think. So we have a real old timey feel to this song once again.
Yeah.
But it's one of my favorite songs on the album.
Can I hear this one more time? It sounds like a 60s commercial, like, here's Tide, right. You know?
Yeah.
Or like, or you see like a little homemaker, I don't know, it reminds me of that. But yeah, that's totally like, going back to that 60s thing, you know?
Housewife Love Song would have been a lot more impactful song, I think, if it was set to this music.
Yeah,
<That's funny>. And the lyrics to this don't make a lot of sense. So once again, this song is about driving, by the way, though. It's about driving a delivery truck and seeing people.
I love that.
But the key line to the song is, it's funny how you always notice when the world gets you down.
Does anyone know why this is actually called The Fashion Focus, the song?
The album?
Well, the song first, because it doesn't seem to have anything to do with fashion.
Maybe it's more fashion, so it's like you only notice the most recent thing going on, like a temporal idea.
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
It's kind of deep.
Maybe you just like alliteration.
Yeah, I'm wondering if it was another one of those phrases he saw somewhere and was like, oh, I like that.
Yeah, a lot of times that's the case, you know? Something just sounds good, and they use it.
So I read on a review of this album that originally it was going to be called The Sad Lives of the Hollywood Lovers. I don't know if that's true because the, you know, the citation they gave to prove that that link is dead now. So
oh, really?
Can't vouch for it, but I kind of like, I don't know if I kind of like that album title. It would definitely give it a different feel going into it. I mean, it is a sad sounding album, but that would really kind of hit it.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's totally true. It might be more apt.
It definitely hits the mood more, but I feel like it would make it less personal for Jason, you know, where we can see a lot of these things coming out of his life.
Yeah.
Because with Card Games and Old Friends, I did read that Jason and the band, you know, for example, played card games all the time while they were on the road and stuff like that.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah. That's such a great image. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
So the next song is Too Much Fun, and I'm just going to throw in that I think this is a song that does not fit, that I think would have worked as like a B-side or would have even fit on maybe Americana or something. And I wonder if this was one of the early songs for this album, like kind of a transition song. I don't know, but anyway, just my take. Like Americana.
Yeah.
And it's 8 minutes of that.
You know what? I barely remember this, but you're right. It sounds really? Like it's something that would come off Americana.
Yeah.
It's like
go. Yeah, my first note here is ready to rock your balls off. So I read that that Jason actually wrote songs to follow up Americana and they got tossed out, which is what we get later on as Portuguese Blues. What's the full name of that album?
I think it's I Am the Portuguese Blues.
I Am the Portuguese Blues is supposedly what was supposed to be the songs that were supposed to follow up Americana.
Wow.
But you're right, Jay. This song definitely could have fit on Americana or the follow up the proper follow up to Americana if they hadn't changed directions. And it rocks out for 8 minutes and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger and it's a pretty good song at that.
Yeah, but you're right, Jay. Yeah. Considering the vibe of the album, that's kind of doesn't belong on there.
Yeah, or why not end with this song because it's got so long? It kind of feels like a good ending song, maybe, you know.
Yeah,
I'm actually a big fan of the idea of ending with this song. Now, when I read a lot of reviews for this album, people like to talk about having a song after it, you know, like Smoke a Cigarette After Sex type thing, you know. But I'm okay with just going to silence after that song because it just builds on itself so much over and over again that just like I remember as a young person going to shows and, you know, like Jay, you and I would go to shows in Austin when we were in college and it'd be an hour and a half, 2 hour drive back. If we were awake enough to have silence in the car, that silence was very nice because your ears just got blown off by the show, you know?
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I think that following up that I think following up Too Much Fun by silence, or sorry, by ending the song, by ending the album, I think would have worked for me.
Well, let's talk about the ending song. And again, I apologize for my pronunciation, Days of Lamech.
I think so.
Where definitely a biblical reference.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts on this one?
I don't even think about this one.
Yeah, I thought it was Days of the Mench.
That'll work too.
Yeah, I'll play this one. The lyrics are really funny on this one. We'll go over the lyrics here in a second. Once again, we get that Exotica thing with like the birds in the background.
Yeah.
Thank you.
This sounds like it should have been on the Gold album.
Yeah.
Really?
Right?
Yeah, I think it's, so. I could see that.
It's got that sound.
It is more reverb drenched than most of the not heavy songs on this album. So the lyrics are, these could be days like Lamech, Methuselah. So Lamech is Noah's father.
Okay.
I think in the Bible, very specifically, Lamech died before the flood so that he wouldn't have to go through the flood, wouldn't have to go through the punishment of Methuselah was isn't Methuselah who's also referred to as a high priest, even before that was before a high priest.
Isn't he also the oldest person in the Bible?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. How old is he?
Like 900 something, is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So then the lyrics say this, boys after girls and the girls after the boys, so excited, but you wrote it down.
What?
Yeah. <I don't know. laughs> That's a good reaction.
One in the farms or in the hills or a wedding day, so excited, but you wrote it down. I don't know.
I think that should have been the review for this song. What? I don't know.
We'll edit it to say that. All right. You want to sum things up here?
Yeah, let's talk about kind of the album as a whole. Any other things we haven't touched on, you know, cover artwork, packaging, any of that stuff. Let's talk through it.
Yeah, I love the cover. I love the barcode on the front. I love how it's like a blurry picture. Like, you don't see that a lot on album covers, yeah. You know? I thought that was so cool. And again, it's just standing out as, okay, this is going to be something different. Not only is it different from the Starflyer albums previously, but this is different than what a lot of bands do for covers, you know? There's a barcode on the front.
and from what I understand, it's the real barcode. They actually got the real barcode for the album and put it on the cover.
Wow.
It also has Tooth & Nails logo on there, which to me is the weirdest part of the the old like hardcore punk days Tooth & Nail logo on this very smooth and
you're right.
Solemn album.
It does kind of stick out, yeah.
Forgot about that.
Yeah, with a very modern aesthetic, I would say, to the cover art. And then the rest of the inside is just random parts of pictures.
Yeah. To me, the colors really pop in a lot of these pictures.
It's more about the colors. And it's kind of like this suburban domesticity thing going on, I think, with it. It's the best way to describe it. There's like grocery store stuff, you know, kids, pools, a lot of grocery store stuff, actually.
Yeah.
Some street signs and people on the street. And then, you know, I think it's like four or five bifold pages. And then the very last bifold page has all the lyrics and all the information about the album, and that's it.
Yeah, and they stuck the credits, like who played what, actually on the CD.
The disc itself.
Yeah.
Which is just a white disc with the little barcode thing from the front cover again. And then, yeah.
Which I always appreciate, you know. I want to know who's playing what. I'm like a liner note guy, you know? I want to know everything. Yes. I want to know who produced it.
Me too.
Yeah, and especially this album, because there's so much going on in a lot of the songs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, We're the Ordinary doesn't have a credit for bass guitar, but there's clearly a bass guitar going on that song. I don't know who, we don't know who. It's a very, in fact, it's something was in my notes, but I didn't say it, but it's just the bass hangs so heavy in that song.
Yeah, I think Jason I'm not sure about that song, but I know that he was known to play. He played everything. Mm-hmm. Did you know that? He played everything?
Up until this album.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Up until this album. Yeah.
Because this album actually has Jeff Cloud on bass, Wayne Everett on drums, and then a lot of Gene Eugene. And then, of course,
Jason. Think they were both on Americana, too.
Mm.
But I heard that
even
the
Jeff?
Gold. Yeah. Oh, well, I don't know. Wayne Everett was definitely on Americana.
Yes.
I heard, I think it was maybe in that essay I was referencing earlier by J. Edward Keyes, that on the Gold album, he spent like a month in the studio. And when I say like a month, like literally they said at one point he had not stepped outside in 7 days. Like he almost drove himself mad recording that Gold album.
Why?
And so I think that was when he was like, okay, I got to get a producer. Like I can't, like this is too much. So I think Americana, I think, was recorded with Gene Eugene as well,
yes.
But this is the one they were kind of like, all right, you know, mm-hmm. we throw the rule book out the window, just do what we want to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, he plays a lot, especially in those early albums, a lot of the instruments.
Yeah, and he would overdub. He would overdub a ton of guitars yes. too.
Yeah.
That would be a lot nicer to have a with how easy it is to have a home studio these days. And
I know, right? I always think about that. Kids got it so easy today. You know what I would have done for a studio in my house? You know, back then you had to pay a lot of money yeah. to go into a studio.
Mm-hmm.
They one other, speaking of studio, one other thing I like about this kind of album artwork is, I guess it's, is it behind the CD, Clifton? Somewhere in mm-hmm. here, they've got photos of the recording.
Yes, that's behind the CD.
Of the album. And it's really, it's nice. They're all wearing those, what are they called? Those members only jackets, you know, from the 80s.
Oh, yeah. So
it's kind of like their little like uniform mm-hmm. for this album. But it's nice to see them in the studio, and Gene Eugene's in a lot of the photos too, wearing the jacket. Yes. It's clear he's yeah. like a member of the band
yeah.
for this. Yeah. And it just, it seems like they had a nice time recording it. It's just, it's nice. It fits with the packaging well.
And Jason's epic sideburns, mm-hmm. which we have to mention. Yes.
Yes. Yes. I love those, man. Does he still have them?
No, he has a full beard these days. Last picture I saw of him.
Yeah, those sideburns.
Guys, he's smiling in at least one of the photos here, which what? Is a big deal. I know.
Which one?
Second on the top row, second from the left.
Oh, you're right. He's playing guitar and smiling.
What? I know. Oh, ooh, then saw the photo next to it. He looks like he's
next
smiling.
Next thing you're
going
to tell me more is he's smiling. Wait, what?
I know, man. It's weird. Oh, so, okay. We touched on it a lot, but overall, how does the album sound, like recording quality wise?
Stellar.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I think this recording is so well done, so well produced. And I think it goes back to probably a lot of Gene Eugene and the mm-hmm. Green Room, yeah. you know? It sounds like, because back, you know, a lot of those albums back then, they kind of sounded cheap sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I think this sounds really good.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It holds up really well. Probably better than, it's definitely, I think, better than any of the other albums we've done on this podcast so far. This one
yes. agreed.
Really holds up.
Agreed. I remember when I first heard this album, that's one thing that stood out to me is like, mm-hmm. this sounds better than anything in this scene I've heard before, yeah. you know, sound wise.
Yeah. I mean, there's such a punk aesthetic, I think, to so much of the scene. And then this comes out almost in hi-fi basically, you know?
Yeah,
compared to the rest of the scene,
you can really hear the warmth too of the tape,
mm-hmm.
the that big thick tape. That's the one thing that's cool about tape.
Yeah,
is like opposed to digital, is it just sounds so warm.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Before we go on to kind of where are they now, yeah, any final thoughts on the album itself?
I want to give a shout out here to something. I found a blog. It's a songaday.blog. And I think the person decided was going to go through a lot of stuff, but they ended up only going through Starflyer stuff. And this woman, she
who is this?
I don't know who it is. I think it's a woman, but she goes through probably 80% of the songs on this album and like long personal write ups that like about what it means to her. And they're pretty universal, but though I would go through it. And
I'm looking at it now. This is nice. Good.
And it's really in depth, and I really enjoyed reading it. And then on Too Much Fun, she actually goes into a musical breakdown of the song.
Wow.
Yeah. But yeah, it was, I really enjoyed reading that blog. While
she went through every song, every album.
Not every song. They're like she did. I don't think she did "We're the Ordinary," for example. So there are a few songs that she didn't do. I think
a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I like about what you guys do is like you break down the song. You know.
We try.
Yeah, we're trying. Well, where are they now? This is kind of easy for this one.
Yeah. So Jason's still doing Starflyer. Starflyer's still putting out albums and still on Tooth and Nail. there was one flower. One album. I Am a CEO came out, which is was a indie release that Jason did by himself. Yeah, but everything else has been on Tooth and Nail. Jason's probably been like a dozen projects over the years, Pony Express, Bon Voyage, Starflyer 2000, the Martin Brothers with his brother Ronnie, Lo and Behold, which is another shoegaze project, Low Tom with David Bazan, and a couple other people.
Clifton doesn't like Low Tom, but I like Low Tom. So just look for Low Tom.
I've been listening to it, and because this is that, I just got the album out. Yeah, I just got the album in the mail, you know, which was probably like 2 months ago, but I'm always behind on stuff. And I've been listening to it. I'm just like, I don't understand. Like, I sent Jay a text. I was just like, I don't understand. Low Tom is so boring.
What do you guys think about Joy Electric?
I think that Joy Electric has a lot of good songs, but there was never an album of Joy. I've always been an album person, and there was never an album that grabbed me from Joy Electric.
Yeah, I agree. I think they have a lot. I think he has, Ronnie, he writes a lot of good songs.
Definitely. What else? According to Discogs, these are not things I've ever heard of. Enemy Ships, Neon Horse, Nova Satori, Velvet Blue Music just released an album from 1988. When Ronnie and Jason were calling themselves Morella's Forest, not to be confused with the dream pop and shoegaze band Onto the Nail called Morella's Forest.
So
they're calling this one Morella's Forest 1988, and they just released an album. It's sold out now, though. Sorry, guys. Maybe we'll get a digital version of it someday, but it's not available right now. Look, Starflyer is and especially Jason Martin is a huge, huge topic, and so we're gonna leave it at that. That's it. So this is interesting, though. This album is out of print.
What?
Really?
Yes, and it's never been re-released. There's never been, you know, Silver and Gold got a 10-year anniversary re-release, and this album didn't.
What blows my mind.
So it's sitting there out of print. The only way to get this is on the used market right now, and there was a vinyl release through
Velvet Blue, maybe.
No, Burnt Toast. Burnt Toast put out a vinyl at the time back in 1999, the year after. But there's never been a vinyl re-release. There's never been another pressing of the CD. It's out of print, and I don't why. Tooth and Nail. Why is this album out of print?
Yes. Tooth and Nail. Answer.
For real, they should put this back in print. It would be a nice vinyl re-release.
Yes.
I think it would sell probably pretty well. A lot of people like this album.
I think a lot of people, I mean, we're not alone, right? I think a lot of people consider this one of the better albums. Yes,
definitely.
A lot of people consider Leave Here a Stranger the better album from this period, which I disagree with. But
yeah, I've read that too. People love that album.
Yeah, it's a good album.
It is.
But it's not, this album's better.
Yeah, and I wonder too, is it because we grew, you know, I always try to factor in nostalgia, you know, like, is that overtaking actual quality or is it?
I don't think so. I think this is a truly just amazing album. I mean, I don't know. I still listen to it and it compares. I think it holds up to anything I listen to today from any market, honestly.
Agreed.
I think you could put it on, well, post-COVID, when people are going in public places again, you know, you could put it on somewhere and I think a lot of people be like, oh, what is this? Like, I think, you know, you put it on at a record store or something, people would be interested to hear more. Like, yeah, it's good. It holds up.
I think so.
I want to give a huge thank you for Jason Fleetwood, lead singer for Bloodshed, guitarist and songwriter for Rainy Days. Check out his newer stuff, Windowsill Audrey, on Bandcamp. And if something comes out of Bloodshed doing something new, we'll let you guys know. If you want to hear more from Jason, we're going to cover both Bloodshed EPs on the next episode, and we'll follow that up with a quick interview with Jason. Thank you again, Jason.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Your Music Saved Us.
If you enjoyed your time with us, please leave us a review or share this episode on the social media of your choice, where you can probably find us at Your Music Saved Us, or email us at yourmusicsavedus@gmail.com.
The music in this episode is the work of Starflyer 59 and is used with apologies, not permission.
Visit starflyer59.com to find some how to buy some Starflyer stuff, or search for Low Tom. Velvet Blue Music has other stuff. You know, and they're still making music, so find it. Bye.
Good.